is from Matthew 28, beginning to read from verse 1. After the Sabbath, at dawn on the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary went to look at the tomb. There was a violent earthquake, for an angel of the Lord came down from heaven and, going to the tomb, rolled back the stone and sat on it. His appearance was like lightning, and his clothes were white as snow. The guards were so afraid of him that they shook and became like dead men. The angel said to the women, "Do not be afraid, for I know that you are looking for Jesus, who was crucified. He is not here. He has risen, just as he said. Come and see the place where he lay. Then go quickly and tell his disciples, 'He has risen from the dead and is going ahead of you into Galilee. There you will see him. Now, I have told you.'" So the women hurried away from the tomb, afraid, yet filled with joy, and ran to his disciples. Suddenly, Jesus met them. "Greetings," he said. They came to him, clasped his feet, and worshipped him. Then Jesus said to them, "Do not be afraid. Go and tell my brothers to go to Galilee. There they will see me." While the women were on their way, some of the guards went into the city and reported to the chief priests everything that had happened. When the chief priests had met with the elders and devised a plan, they gave the soldiers a large sum of money, telling them, "You are to say, 'His disciples came during the night and stole him away while we were asleep.' If this report gets to the governor, we will satisfy him and keep you out of trouble." So the soldiers took the money and did as they were instructed. And this story has been widely circulated among the Jews to this very day. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
Thanks very much, Joe. Hold on a minute while I just do a little bit of furniture removal. Lovely. There we are. Well, Easter Day, I don't know about you, long weekend, bank holiday involved, time definitely to play a few games. We've had Disney Trivial Pursuit, we've had a game called Cop It in our house over the weekend where you chase each other round, we've played Rummy Cub, and here's one just for you guys. This is a little brain teaser. I hope you can see, all the more reason for moving forward, I hope you can see all the pictures on the screen, and I wonder if you can tell me what links all of these pictures. What is the theme of these pictures? I do actually mean for you to think about it and let me know when you know what you think the answer is. Stick your hand up. It's a proper game. Really? What's the answer, Charles? Good news? Yeah, absolutely. Announcements. Announcements. The way we announce stuff has changed a lot, hasn't it, over centuries, over history. So if we go, I think probably the earliest type of announcement we've got here is Mercury, the Roman, in mythology, the Roman god, Roman messenger who would take messages between the gods and bring announcements to them in Roman mythology. And then there's quite an ancient births, marriages and deaths, which we might better know as the hatched, matched and dispatched. that you would find in the newspaper. Days gone by. Morning Herald, name of a newspaper, but actually Herald, of course, again, is another word for a kind of formal messenger. Coming down from that to the middle, we've got you probably can't see the words, that's the formal notice. I love it that Buckingham Palace does this. They come out with a piece of paper and stick it in the notice board still outside Buckingham Palace, as if to think none of us knew that Catherine had a baby until they'd stuck the piece of paper onto the notice board. And then, of course, it was official and it was all right, we could know. Never mind all the people camped outside the hospital. To the left, a town crier. I would have put those in the old-fashioned category, but actually town criers are quite a thriving breed. And we happen to have a friend who does that as his hobby and did town criering. I'm not sure what the proper word is, at our wedding and announced that we were coming into the meal. And actually, that was quite fun. Social media has changed the way that we announce things. I don't know if you can work out the top left. Can you tell what that's announcing? A baby. There's a little safety pin inside the big mummy safety pin. There's going to be a new baby in that family. And the bottom right, can you see what that is announcing? An engagement. It's two handprints in the sand with rings on the fingers as if to say, look what we've done. We've got rings on our fingers. We're getting married. Often when we make an announcement, there's quite a lot we want to communicate in a short amount of time. And it's not often or not always just words that we use to make an announcement. We use images too. So, what about the most important announcement that has ever been made? Probably alongside the one that Gabriel makes to Mary a few chapters, the other end of the gospel. How was the announcement that Jesus had beaten death and was now risen? How was that announcement made? Well, let's just paint the picture in our minds. If you've got the Bible in front of it, you go back to Matthew 28, verses 2 to 4. There was a violent earthquake, already quite dramatic. For an angel of the Lord came down from heaven and going to the tomb, rolled back the stone and sat on it. His appearance was like lightning and his clothes were white as snow. So let's just think about that picture in our minds. There's a garden tomb. Surrounded by guards, and Matthew tells us they were literally scared to death. Verse 4 goes on, the guards were so afraid of him, this angel, that they shook and became like dead men. Scared stiff, we might say, mightn't we? And the angel rolls away the stone and sits on the stone. And then the angel goes on to speak. But let's wait. Let's wait to think about what he said. Let's stay with the picture because like other announcements, certainly the ones that we see today, there's so much in the picture before the angel speaks. There's an earthquake. Something really significant is taking place. The angel shines like lightning. It's spectacular. And he sits on the stone. I think I've probably skipped over that for however many years I've been reading these passages. And I don't know about you, but that seems, well, it seems a bit cocky. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that in church, am I? It's a little bit nonchalant, isn't it? I don't know. I can imagine, this is just me, it doesn't say this in the Bible, this is just me. I can imagine the angel's manner sort of thinking, you don't really think this bit of rock is going to stop the Prince of Peace, do you? No way. He created the rock. It's the work of his hands. The whole of nature sings to his tune. A cave and a stone was never going to hold him. It's a beautiful contrast because, of course, all the way up to this point, all through the gospel, Jesus is a man of enormous humility. He all so often doesn't advertise who he is. In fact, in certain times we know that he tells people to keep it quiet. And yet here we have an angel sitting, I imagine, arms folded, a little bit job done feeling. And I think it's just a lovely, lovely contrast. I imagine the scene a little bit like an explorer who's just got to the top of Everest or the North Pole and stuck their flag in and say, I've done it. And this is a bit like God putting his flag into the ground and saying, this is my territory, this is my ground, and it's holy, and not even death has control over what happens here. By sitting on the stone, the angel makes a dramatic statement of triumph. The power of heaven has beaten the power of death and darkness for eternity. So now we've stopped at the picture. Let's go on and think about what he says. Because, of course, he speaks to the women who've gathered there. And these three short verses, the angel heralds a new era, a new paradigm, a new kingdom, in fact, or a new stage of the kingdom where things are totally different. So the angel said to the women, do not be afraid, for I know that you're looking for Jesus who was crucified. He's not here. He has risen, just as he said. So the most important announcement, or part two of the most important announcement ever made, says, there's an angel sitting on the stone. He says, do not be afraid. He's not here. He's risen. Do not be afraid. How dare we say that in the 21st century? How dare we say to somebody in the 21st century, do not be afraid. Fear and anxiety are a key staple of life in the 21st century. And if this is something that is close to your heart, I try to speak carefully. And I want to really honour the fact that you live life with that struggle. Anxiety is so prevalent, sometimes in debilitating measures. I know there are folks here on the run-up to exams in the summer. I really hope there are folk around you supporting you and helping you keep a bit of perspective and making sure that you know you are you and you have can be confident in who you are and, yes, do your best. But anxiety, for that kind of pressure, actually we need to have the support of other people to help us just keep things in the right place. For some of us, we may have just been looking at the headlines, the dialogue, or not quite dialogue, that's going on between the US and North Korea via China, and only a week ago between the US and Russia and Syria, and all of these enormous situations right at boiling point in the world. There is much to be concerned about. How can we say, do not be afraid? And then for a moment, I just want to do a bit of biology. I didn't do very well in, well, actually not too badly, but I didn't major in science at school. But hey, never mind, let's have a go. Let's do some biology. Because of course we are created by God. We're wired up, we're designed in a certain way. We're created to survive on a daily basis. Our bodies heal themselves. I was stung by a wasp a couple of days ago. Pretty nasty, but it's going. My body's doing what it needs to do to heal that horrible wasp sting. I'm afraid the wasp didn't survive. Sorry. We're wired up with a really important system to protect ourselves when danger comes along. And there's this bit of our brain, if you really are a doctor or a scientist, I'm really sorry if I make a mess of this, but this is roughly what I think what happens. There's a bit of our brain called the amygdala, which I think should be a star system in Star Wars, but it's actually a bit of the brain, the amygdala. And it kicks into action, and it contains the fight or flight system, and it triggers the release of adrenaline, high alert, strong emotions, extra strength in case we need to stay and fight for our safety and protect ourselves, or in case we need to flee fast back out of danger. This is a healthy system. It means we're conditioned to self-protect against danger, and that is a good thing. Sometimes The amygdala goes into overdrive, gets a little bit carried away and won't calm down. And that's when anxiety becomes a daily challenge and we might need help from medical professionals. But on the whole, the amygdala is our friend. And I don't know about you, but if you've ever been in a scary situation, can you think of a time when you were frightened? And if someone had said to you in that situation, maybe you're in you've been in plane turbulence or something like that, and suddenly the plane suddenly drops or something like that, and someone had said to you at that point, don't be afraid. Well, it's not just in my gift. I don't know about you, but it's not in my gift to say to myself, oh, it's all right, someone's told me not to be afraid, just turn it off. And then it goes away. Can you do that? If you can, I'd love to know how. But I can't. And I wonder if there's the temptation, because we're Christians, those of us who are, to say, I'm afraid, but I shouldn't be afraid because the Bible tells me not to be afraid. So now I'm really scared, and also I'm really ashamed of myself because I'm afraid and I'm told not to be afraid. And you end up making it 10 times worse. And what's worse, better, I'm not sure, is the Bible, somebody's counted people who do these things and said there's actually 365 times in the Bible where it says do not be afraid or something similar. Conveniently also 365 promises I've heard. I haven't counted, but that's what they say. 365 times when the Bible says do not be afraid. What are we meant to do with that? What are we meant to do with that when it's really frightening? What were those women and those guards who were scared stiff meant to do with do not be afraid? Most years, I don't know if you've been, most years I go to something called the Wintershall Play, which is over near Guildford, and you spend the day following around actors outside in the countryside as they act out the drama of Luke's gospel, and it is beautiful. And as an aside plug, I'll be taking another group from St Mary's this year. It's in June. Watch out for more information if you'd like to come with us. And each time I go, it strikes me that because it's all in contemporary language, and obviously it's dramatized so that you can follow it along, one of the things that Jesus in that production says very, very often, almost in every scene, in a kind tone of voice, is this: it's all right. It's all right. Don't worry. It's all right. I can sort this out. It's all right. There are loads of situations where folks are afraid or confused. The one that comes to mind now is where there's a man who's been possessed by a demon and he's behaving really quite alarmingly. And they act this out really dramatically. And Jesus says, all right, don't worry. And that is a different way of saying do not be afraid than the way we might listen to these words of do not be afraid. It's all right. I'm here. It's going to be all right. We can't just turn off anxiety. It's part of how we're wired up. Circumstances need to change because actually it's our healthy response to dangerous circumstances, or we need to protect ourselves from whatever the trigger is. And my sense with these words, do not be afraid, it's an encouragement that God is with us. He knows what the danger is, and he invites us to trust him despite our fear. My sense is that there is a kindness behind these words, not just a command. Paul Aguder, a contemporary theologian, writes this: God is far beyond our imaginings. When people encounter him, or even his angels, the appropriate response is fear. But we often read wrongly those encouragements not to be afraid. They're not saying that there's no need to be afraid, but that God invites us to step beyond our fear into a new relationship. The angel says, do not be afraid. Then the angel says, he's not here. He is risen. I nearly put in brackets at the bottom of this slide, yippee, because that's the kind of thing that I would say. But I didn't think everyone would appreciate it, so I didn't. But I said it anyway. He's not here. He's risen. Here is the nub of the announcement. Complete shock to those who were gathered on that Sunday morning. Jesus was alive. He had come to life. And so a question, another question that genuinely I would like to think to know what your answer is. Here it is. What is the meaning of life? Just a small question for a Sunday evening. Shout out some answers. What is the meaning of life? Oh, I was hoping for 42. Where are you, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy? I almost, if I'd had the time and the technology, I would have had some QI klaxons going on for the obvious answers. 42, Monty Python film, also not sure if I can say that in church. There are lots of, you know, the meaning of life is a phrase that is around, isn't it? But Easter, every year, invites us to address this question in our lives. What is the meaning of life? Not in the sense of what is the meaning of my life? What am I all about? What am I going to do? What gives me meaning? But I want to just add a bit to the question. What is the meaning of life after death? What is the meaning of the fact that Jesus was dead and then he wasn't? What is the meaning of life after death? When I was training to be a lawyer a long time ago, we had to practice negotiation skills, and a key part of that process was to be able to articulate the very worst scenario that could come out of this situation, the very best scenario that could come out of the situation, so that we could work out, if we were acting on behalf of a client, where sort of a middle point, what would it be that we'd be willing to accept? So obviously we really don't want to accept the worst case scenario, we'd love the best, but actually where might we come out somewhere in the middle? That was part of the training. And by doing so, it sort of helped us think about situations in our own life and in, you know, day to day. What's the worst that could happen here is a question we often ask ourselves, isn't it? What's the worst case scenario? Before the events of Easter Day, the worst case scenario for humanity was death. That was the worst case scenario. Death was the end. It had the power to leave us permanently afraid. Is that it? What does my life mean? Because actually it's all going to end in the same way. Death. But the worst case scenario because of Easter has shifted, completely shifted, because death no longer holds that power. It's not the unknown and it's not the end point that it used to be before Easter. The worst case scenario is unalterably changed. Folks, if we truly, truly believe that Jesus beat death, that he rose again, that Jesus is alive today, that ought to have enormous implications, didn't it, for the way we live life. The meaning of life is freedom from the power of death. The meaning of life is a confidence in God. The meaning of life is changed perspective in almost everything we do. From status to financial security to the way we treat other people to eternal hope for us and for everybody. Peter, the same Peter who denied Jesus three times, the same Peter who thought Jesus was dead and that the new kingdom they'd hoped for was over. Peter who loved Jesus with all his heart and eventually shared breakfast with him on the shores of Lake Galilee a few days after Easter. Peter, one of my all-time heroes, writes in his own letter later on. Sorry, thought I had that. I haven't. Let me read it to you. Praise be to the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ. In his great mercy, he has given us new birth into a living hope through the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead, and into an inheritance that can never perish, spoil, or fade. That's Peter, who messed it up royally, who now has that hope, whose worst case scenario has changed beyond recognition. And so on this Easter Sunday, let's ask ourselves, has the meaning of life... after death permeated every single area of your life, my life? Has it permeated your generosity? Has it permeated your confidence? Has it permeated your future plans? Has it permeated your family? Has it permeated your perspective on life? I wonder if you just think about what the next week holds for you. How does the meaning of life after death, the meaning of Jesus' resurrection, affect your day to day? Is there anything that needs to change? The angel sat on a stone, triumphant. He told those present, "Do not be afraid." He announced earth-shattering news. He is not here. He is risen. And we now have to decide what the meaning is of life after death for each one of us.